So you wake up on May 7th, 2026. You check your phone while your coffee is brewing.
Like we all do.
Right, exactly. And in the span of just 24 hours, the biggest YouTuber on Earth has completely vanished from the platform. Google search has been dethroned by teenagers. And, I mean, a major corporation has actively used a satellite update to destroy $175 million worth of physical property.
Just sitting in people's living rooms.
Literally in their living rooms. Oh, and a humanoid robot just went on sale for the price of a used car. So, welcome to a custom deep dive tailored just for you. Today, we are looking at a massive, frankly chaotic intelligence drop from the Tekin Morning Report.
Yeah, it's an unprecedented concentration of industry-shaping events. I mean, we have massive hardware leaks from Sony, a historic consumer robotics launch, this generational fracture in internet search
You're
behaviors.
just huge.
It is, plus a massive creator rebellion, unprecedented hardware bricking by Nintendo, and a landmark federal law all hitting the wire simultaneously.
It sounds like absolute chaos. But our mission today, for you listening, is to synthesize this avalanche of information. Because if you look closely, these aren't just isolated tech headlines. They are deeply, deeply connected.
That's the real story here. Underneath all of these seemingly distinct events lies a single unifying battle, and that is ownership versus control.
Right.
We are watching a live tug of war over who actually holds the power over the technology in your life. Is it the multi-trillion dollar corporation that designed the product, or is it you, the person who actually paid for it?
Okay, let's unpack this, starting with a surprising return to the past. Because if we want to understand the future of owning our tech, we actually have to look at how physical, touchable hardware is making a massive, really aggressive comeback.
Yeah, and it begins with an audio leak that has the gaming world losing its collective mind today.
The Mark Cerny confidential meeting leak. The internet is completely melting down over this. So Mark Cerny, the lead architect of PlayStation, was caught on tape this morning confirming that the upcoming PlayStation 6 is going to feature a hybrid optical laser drive.
Which is wild.
It is. And it natively plays PS1, PS2, and PS3 physical discs. I mean, PS6 backward compatibility is the number one global trend right now. And the secondary market reaction, instantaneous and totally wild.
Oh, the prices are surging.
Yeah, like a rare PS1 physical game like Suikoden the Second, which yesterday was selling for maybe $300, is now projected to jump to $1,500 or even $2,000. People are literally clearing out thrift stores as we speak.
And, you know, the engineering behind this leak is really what makes it so significant. You have to understand that modern consoles have largely abandoned complex optical drives.
Right, to push consumers toward digital downloads.
Exactly. But Sony and Panasonic actually co-developed a drive with three distinct lasers to accommodate the physical reality of older media.
Okay, break that down for me because reading the specs in the report, it just looked like a list of random wavelengths. Why do you need three separate lasers just to read a disc?
Well, because a CD, a DVD, and a Blu-ray are physically different thicknesses.
Sure.
Right, and the data is packed at completely different densities. So Sony had to build a drive that can instantly mechanically adapt its laser wavelength.
That sounds incredibly complicated.
It is. It uses a 780 nanometer red laser for those chunky PS1 CDs, a 650 nanometer red laser for PS2 DVDs, and then a microscopic 405 nanometer blue laser for PS3 Blu-rays. The drive auto-detects the disc format and literally physically swaps the reading mechanism.
Wow. I mean, that is an insane level of over-engineering for games that are a quarter of a century old. Cerny used this incredible analogy in the leak. He said it's like running a classic car engine in a modern chassis.
Which is a perfect way to describe it.
Because it's not just clunky old graphics, right?
Yeah.
They are using an AI engine called PSSR 2.0 PlayStation Spectral Super Resolution to upscale these games. So taking a 240p PS1 game and blowing it up to 4K.
Smoothing out the jagged edges, boosting the frame rate to 120 frames per second.
Yeah, it's like taking a damaged, pixelated Polaroid and having a master art restorer perfectly repaint it in high definition in real time. But I have to ask, why is Sony aggressively pivoting back to physical media when the rest of the industry, specifically Xbox, has been so obsessed with digital streaming?
Well, it's a highly targeted strategic war. I mean, Microsoft has championed backward compatibility for years, but their approach relies on digital emulation.
Meaning you don't actually use the old disc.
Right. But Sony is leaning heavily into the concept of physical ownership to differentiate themselves. They are appealing directly to collectors and purists who want to preserve gaming history in a tangible way.
So it's a direct strike at Xbox.
It is, and especially at Nintendo, which currently forces you to endlessly repurchase or, you know, rent classic games through a digital subscription model.
Right. So Sony is betting that you want to own your games. But what happens when the physical thing you own physically breaks?
Yeah, that's the big question.
Because that fear of not controlling your own hardware leads us perfectly into the second huge story today, the newly passed Federal Right to Repair and 3D Print Act.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, the U.S. Congress just legally mandated that tech companies must publish their official CAD files.
Those are the 3D design blueprints, right?
Exactly, they're blueprints, along with material specifications for non-electronic plastic and metal parts. So if the hinge on your expensive laptop snaps or the plastic frame of your phone cracks,
Apple or Samsung can no longer force you to buy that specific proprietary piece from them at a massive markup.
Precisely. You are legally allowed to download the file and 3D print it right at home.
Which sounds like a utopian dream for consumers. But I really have to push back here.
Okay, go ahead.
Is this actually practical for the average person? I mean, I barely know how to unclog my normal paper printer. Are we just creating a bunch of mini factories in our living rooms, churning out subpar counterfeit plastic parts that are just going to melt and end up breaking our devices anyway?
Well, it is a very valid concern, and we have to look at the economic fallout impartially here. On one side of the debate, big tech stands to lose billions.
Billions with a B.
Yeah. Apple alone generates an estimated $8 billion annually from repair services and spare parts. Their argument is that this act could lead to severe security vulnerabilities, the nullification of official warranties, and a massive infringement on their intellectual property.
So they're saying it's dangerous.
Right. They genuinely argue that substandard at-home 3D printed parts could warp under heat and physically destroy the internal electronics.
But the markets are clearly betting on the consumer side of this.
Right. Absolutely. Consumer 3D printer companies like Prusa and Creality saw their stock surge 40% today. I mean, you can buy a highly capable 3D printer now for under $200.
That's wild.
For the consumer, it drastically reduces the friction and cost of repairs. Environmentally, advocates argue the reduction in e-waste could be staggering if we just stopped throwing away whole laptops over a broken piece of plastic.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And globally, it empowers local independent repair shops to fix devices without relying on expensive, tightly controlled supply chains.
So on one hand, you have the U.S. government legally empowering you to modify, print, and fix your own hardware. But on the exact same day, Nintendo is demonstrating the extreme, terrifying opposite.
Yes, they are actively punishing users who dare to alter their devices.
This is the Nintendo firmware update from May 6th. And let me set the scene for you listening because it is brutal. Yesterday, Nintendo pushed an unprecedented mandatory background update for the Switch 2.
And it secretly scans the system.
Right. It scans it to detect custom firmware or CFW, like Atmosphere or Hecate. Yeah. If it finds over 200 different specific signatures of hacking tools, it permanently bricks the NAND bootloader.
The console is just completely dead.
A $350 piece of plastic.
Right.
And the wildest part of this report, it happens even to users who had previously hacked their consoles but reverted back to the official firmware.
Wow. So Nintendo kept a secret blacklist.
Exactly. Yeah. Between 50,000 and 100,000 U.S. consoles were wiped out overnight. We are talking about $175 million in damages.
It is an incredibly aggressive tactic. I mean, the update was designed to install silently, even while the consoles were resting in sleep mode.
I mean, I'm trying to wrap my head around the precedent here. To define it simply, the NAND bootloader is basically the foundational digital ignition switch of the console, right?
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
Once that's fried, the hardware doesn't even know how to turn itself on. This feels like a car manufacturer using a remote satellite connection to permanently destroy your car's engine while it's parked in your driveway.
Yeah.
Just because they caught you installing an unauthorized aftermarket radio last year.
Right.
Can a company actually do that?
Well, that is the exact ethical and legal gray area we are entering, and it's vital. We view both arguments objectively here. Nintendo's legal defense is that they have an absolute right to protect their products, their ecosystem, and their intellectual property.
Because hacking leads to piracy.
Exactly. Modifying a console explicitly violates the terms of use you agree to when you turn it on. They argue these extreme actions are necessary to combat widespread game piracy, which fundamentally hurts developers and the whole industry.
But the blowback from consumer rights groups has been absolutely fierce.
Unsurprisingly. Several major U.S. law firms are already preparing a massive class action lawsuit, arguing this constitutes the willful destruction of private property.
Wow.
The Electronic Frontier Foundation, the EFF, issued a scathing statement today. Their stance is that even if a user violates a software terms of service agreement, a corporate manufacturer should never have the remote authority to physically destroy the hardware that a consumer purchased.
It's crazy.
This raises an important question. When you buy a device, bring it into your home, and hold it in your hands, do you actually own it? Or are you just licensing the privilege to use it from the manufacturer indefinitely?
Right, exactly. And that underlying anxiety about corporate control doesn't just apply to plastic hardware. If consumers are fighting for control over their physical consoles, the internet's biggest personalities are fighting for control over their digital livelihoods.
Yeah, because if Nintendo can brick a console, YouTube can brick a career.
Here's where it gets really interesting. Jimmy Donaldson, better known as Mr. Beast, the biggest YouTuber on the planet with over 300 million subscribers.
Yeah.
Just announced he is exiting YouTube.
Which is unprecedented.
Completely.
Yeah.
But he didn't leave alone. He coordinated an exodus with 10 of the top creators on the platform. We're talking PewDiePie, Marks Brownlee, Linus Tech Tips, Veritasium.
Combined, they control over 600 million subscribers.
Yeah. And they've formed their own decentralized platform called CreatorCo.
And their reasoning comes down entirely to economics and algorithmic control. You know, YouTube currently keeps 45% of all ad revenue generated by creators.
That's a huge cut.
It is. Mr. Beast noted in his exit manifesto that his team spends tens of millions of dollars producing these massive spectacles, and the 55-45 split is just no longer viable for them.
Plus, the algorithm changes.
Right. Furthermore, creators are entirely at the mercy of black box algorithm changes. A minor tweak by an engineer in California can tank a creator's global viewership overnight without any warning.
So they built CreatorCo. To give you the mechanics, it's governed by a DAO, a decentralized autonomous organization.
Which means there isn't a traditional CEO.
Right. Creators and users actually have blockchain verified voting rights on how the platform operates. It's a $99 a month subscription. It utilizes NFTs as digital VIP passes for exclusive access. And most importantly, creators keep 90% of the revenue.
That's a massive shift.
It is. But I am genuinely stuck in the logistics here. Look,
yeah.
YouTube spends billions of dollars every single year on CDN networks, these massive energy-hungry server farms that pipe 4K video instantly around the globe, along with immense content moderation costs.
Yeah, running video is not cheap.
Can a decentralized platform really survive that kind of infrastructure burden?
Well, that is the multi-billion dollar question that the entire industry is asking today. CreatorCo is attempting to solve that infrastructure problem by utilizing a hybrid content delivery system.
Okay, how does that work?
They're combining traditional centralized servers with peer-to-peer or P2P technology.
So instead of YouTube acting like a massive central reservoir pumping water to every single house in the city, CreatorCo is making every viewer's house a mini water tower that shares the load with the neighbors.
Precisely. As you stream a video, your device actually helps host and deliver packets of that same video to other users nearby.
Wow.
Which theoretically slashes the central server costs dramatically.
It's a brilliant concept, but is it enough to actually threaten Alphabet, YouTube's parent company?
The stock market certainly thinks so. I mean, Alphabet's stock dropped 3.2% on the news this morning.
That's billions in market cap.
Yeah. YouTube CEO Neil Mohan is reportedly holding emergency closed-door meetings, offering massive revenue guarantees to top-tier creators who haven't jumped ship yet.
Trying to stop the bleeding.
Exactly. The creator economy is worth $250 billion globally. What we are looking at is the very real risk of fragmentation. Think about what happened to television streaming.
Right. We used to have just Netflix.
Now we have Netflix, Disney Plus, Max, Hulu, Paramount. If CreatorCo succeeds, the unified one-stop platform of YouTube fractures, users are going to have to decide exactly how many different 99 monthly subscriptions they're willing to pay for just to watch their favorite vloggers.
It's wild to think of an unstoppable juggernaut like YouTube actually sweating. But the crazy part of the Tech and Morning report is that YouTube isn't even the only Alphabet property facing an existential crisis today.
No, it's not.
The very foundation of how we find information on the internet is fracturing.
You're referring to the generational search engine traffic data that dropped yesterday.
Yes. For the first time in internet history, OpenAI search officially surpassed Google among Gen Z users, meaning anyone under 25. It was 52% for OpenAI, 48% for Google.
It marks the end of a nearly 20-year empire. I mean, Google has dominated the way humanity accesses information since 1998.
But OpenAI's GPT-5-powered search engine doesn't give you a list of 10 blue links to click through and read.
No, it simply synthesizes the internet and gives you the direct, comprehensive answer. And the engagement metrics highlight a completely different user behavior.
Right. The report said Gen Z is doing 15 searches a day for an average session of 8 minutes on OpenAI.
Compare that to just 8 searches for a total of 3 minutes on Google.
But the report also notes that older demographics, those over 40, are still using Google 85% of the time. If you're over 30 right now, you're probably thinking, well, I like my blue links. I want to see the sources. I want to browse.
Yeah.
But the data shows Gen Z doesn't care about the journey. They just want the destination.
Mm.
So are we looking at a permanent generational split where older people click links and younger people just converse with an AI? Or will everyone eventually cross over?
It's highly likely to be a transition period rather than a permanent split, especially as OpenAI aggressively expands globally with native support for 50 additional languages. But what we are witnessing with Google is a textbook case of the innovator's dilemma.
Meaning they are trapped by their own business model.
Exactly. Google makes the vast majority of its revenue through search advertising. Advertisers pay to be at the top of that list of blue links.
Right.
If Google gives you a direct, perfect AI answer, you don't click the links, you don't visit the websites, and Google doesn't get paid. Sundar Pichai, Google CEO, was leaked in an internal memo saying, "We need to cannibalize our own business before someone else does."
So they know the ship is sinking, but bailing water means throwing away their gold. How do they fix it?
Well, there are heavy rumors that Google is scrambling to develop a $9.99 a month ad-free AI search response.
But is anyone going to pay for that?
That's the problem. It's an incredibly tough sell to ask users to suddenly pay for something they currently get for free from OpenAI. Google entered the AI search game late, specifically because they were protecting their ad revenue, and now they're paying a steep price by losing the next generation of internet users.
Wow. So AI is fundamentally changing how we interact with the digital world on our screens. We are having conversations with data. But the final and maybe most visually stunning story of the day brings that exact same intelligence stepping right off the screen and into our physical living rooms.
The historic Atlas Home release.
Yes. Boston Dynamics just released the consumer version of their humanoid robot, Atlas Home. It cost $15,000 in the U.S., and they sold out of the entire first production batch in exactly 12 seconds.
12 seconds?
People across the industry are calling it the iPhone moment of robotics.
And the physical specifications alone are remarkable. It stands 150 centimeters tall, weighs 45 kilograms, and has 28 highly advanced electric joints.
Which allows for incredibly fluid, bipedal, human-like movement, right?
Exactly. To navigate, it uses LiDAR, which is essentially shooting invisible lasers around the room, to build a real-time 3D map so it doesn't bump into your furniture, along with stereo cameras.
And the brain of the machine runs a custom household version of GPT-5.
Right. You don't program it. You literally just talk to it. You say, please clean the living room, and it autonomously observes the mess, formulates a plan, and figures out how to do it.
And the promotional and beta tester videos are absolutely everywhere today. Yeah. Here's this viral video of an Atlas Home gently helping an 85-year-old grandfather stand up from his chair.
Yeah, reminding him of his complex medication schedule.
And playing a physical game of chess with him. It's got over 20 million views, and it's incredibly moving. But I have to push back a bit on the hype here. I watched Marquise Brownlee's review this morning. MKBHD gave it an 8.5 out of 10. He noted the battery only lasts 4 to 6 hours under heavy load, and it really struggles with complex, multi-step tasks, like cooking a meal.
Right.
I mean, $15,000 is the price of a used Honda Civic.
Right.
At this early stage, is this truly a societal replacement for human caregiving, or just the world's most expensive, over-engineered Roomba?
Well, it's a fair critique of version one hardware, but we have to look at the competitive landscape and the sheer economics of what Boston Dynamics just achieved. Tesla's Optimus Gen 3 is currently projected to come in at around $20,000 to $25,000.
Okay.
AI's figure 02 is priced at $18,000. Boston Dynamics undercutting the entire market at $15,000 while offering superior mobility based on decades of military and industrial research is a massive market disruption.
Wait, hold on. I'm struggling to see how this doesn't just completely decimate the labor market.
It's a huge concern.
There are over 4 million home care workers in the U.S. alone. Doesn't the basic math dictate that if a family pays a one-time fee of $15,000 for an Atlas, they're going to immediately fire the $50,000 a year human caregiver to recoup the cost?
That is the intuitive conclusion, and it is the core societal anxiety we have to analyze impartially here. There is immense fear about job displacement in the care sector.
Naturally.
However, labor economists are looking at this through the lens of historical automation, arguing that these robots will likely complement human workers rather than completely replace them.
Explain the mechanics of that, because it sounds a bit optimistic to me.
The argument is about the division of labor. The robot can handle the grueling, physical, heavy lifting, literally. Moving heavy furniture, vacuuming, carrying groceries up the stairs, or physically lifting a patient out of bed.
Ah, okay.
This theoretically frees up human caregivers, who currently suffer incredibly high rates of physical burnout and injury, to focus on the things a machine currently cannot do.
Like providing deep empathy.
Empathy, emotional support, and complex, nuanced psychological care. The challenge won't necessarily be job destruction, but rather the massive societal adaptation required.
And the privacy loss.
Oh, absolutely. The inevitable privacy regulations needed when you have a walking, seeing, internet-connected AI living in your home.
So what does this all mean? We started this deep dive looking at a massive, chaotic pile of separate news stories. But the through line for you, the listener, is undeniable. Think about the crazy journey we just took.
It's a lot to process.
It is. You are dusting off 25-year-old physical PS1 discs because holding a piece of media in your hands is suddenly incredibly valuable again. You are legally allowed to download a blueprint and 3D print a replacement hinge for your laptop instead of begging Apple to do it for you.
Right.
You are navigating a fractured internet where Gen Z just talks to an AI instead of Googling, and where the biggest creators in the world are ditching YouTube so they can actually own the digital platforms they built.
All while a $15,000 humanoid robot maps your living room and folds your laundry. It is a fundamental seismic shift in power. For the last decade, the intermediaries, the search engine giants, the algorithmic video platforms, the hardware repair monopolies, they held all the cards and all the control.
Yeah.
What the May 6th, 2026 data dump represents is the grip of those intermediaries finally loosening. End users, gamers, regular consumers, and digital creators are gaining unprecedented direct control over their digital and physical property.
It really is the ultimate battle of ownership versus control.
Exactly. And I want to leave you with a final thought to mull over, connecting two of today's biggest stories in a way that might change how you view the future.
Okay, let's hear it.
We talked extensively about the new right to repair law mandating CAD files for 3D printing plastic parts. Right now, consumer advocates are pushing aggressively to make the internal electronic schematics public next.
Right, taking the repair laws a step further.
Well, consider this scenario. Boston Dynamics Atlas Home Robot runs on an incredibly advanced autonomous problem-solving AI. Let's say you also have a $200 3D printer sitting on your desk. Yeah. What is going to stop your $15,000 AI home robot from noticing its own plastic joint is fracturing, autonomously going online, downloading the manufacturer's open source CAD file, using your 3D printer to physically create the replacement part and repairing itself?
Oh my God.
Or modifying other broken devices in your home completely on its own.
Wow. A self-diagnosing, self-repairing, autonomous agent living in your house, actively managing and fixing your physical property.
Oh.
That is, well, it's equal parts incredible and slightly terrifying.
It really is.
We are going to leave you to chew on that one. Thank you for joining us on this custom deep dive. Keep asking questions, keep challenging the algorithms, and most importantly, stay curious.